To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Welcome, everyone, to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
All right, you've heard the song. You know what you're listening to. We're Rook Free tonight. But I'm here with the creators of Shock-Headed Peter. Please introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Jessica Silvetti.
I'm E.B. Kogan.
I read the first two installments of this book. It's absolutely beautiful. It's charming and mortifying all at once. Could you give the listeners an elevator pitch of the work, please?
Yes, Shock-Headed Peter is Labyrinth meets A Nightmare on Elm Street by way of Hayao Miyazaki. It's a haunting horror with a hint of heart. It's basically the harbinger of punishment comes to the small town of Winding Springs, and a young girl with a literal broken heart is troubled by her desire to join his disturbing crusade.
The main character is one of the strongest characters I think I've ever seen. I absolutely loved her. She has a flaw to her, which I've actually never seen. And you don't really discuss it too much. You kind of allude to it. Shock-Headed Peter even mentions it a little bit. Could you tell us a little bit about her?
Yeah, so our main character is Ruby, and she's a girl who was born with an actual broken heart. So she basically has been, like, bullied her whole life because she's deemed to be, you know, lacking, in other words. So she represents a lot of people who feel, you know, they're not enough, or they're poked fun at for
limited in some way.
Yeah, limited. So we really wanted to make sure that our main character had a lot, no pun intended, a lot of heart and grounded the story.
And we did, you know, we do some kind of steampunky type things where she has to wear like a wrist monitor that, you know, flashes when her heart starts to overwork itself so that, you know, she can keep tabs on it. And in the part one, you actually see a flashback scene where how that mechanical bit progressed. You know, maybe when she was younger, she had like a full-on dive suit, and then it turned into a vest, and then it got refined to a wrist monitor,
which her father made because he's like a
master clockmaker.
Yeah.
Then I caught that because at the beginning she had the, I thought it was a watch because, you know, it's a watchmaking story.
Yeah.
And then I start, the flashbacks are fantastic. I like how you use color in this book to change the scenes, change the moods. But I like how it's not all spelled out for you. It slowly unfolds the story and the flaw. I don't find her flawed. I find her absolutely wonderful. I think she's cool. She's awesome. And I don't agree with Shock-Headed to Peter taking interest in her, by the way, but nevertheless.
Yeah, well, there's some interesting twists and turns that come in part two, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, but we're glad you like her, and that's exactly the thing, right? We love our audience to root and love our heroine, and the thing is that in the town of Winding Springs, though, like, she's just been bullied her whole life, and, you know, people have overlooked the value and the strength that she does hold.
And we, I mean, like, we personally, I think we care for Ruby. I think there are parts of us in Ruby, I mean, maybe that's just how we work, or maybe that's this particular project, but we definitely have a personal attachment to her. There's certain comments on the society and culture that kind of metastasize itself into the story and really interesting ways, and just we had a lot of fun with it. And a quick nod, though, to, you mentioned about the color, to our artist Giuseppe Saavedra Di Stefano in Italy, Rome. Amazing. He does everything. He does the inks and pencils, he does the color, and he does the lettering.
Yeah, he's amazing. We're so lucky to be working with him, and he's artist for our first book. He's our artist for this next book we're working on. And exactly one of the reasons we fell in love with his work was the way he uses color and light. So that was very important to us. And he does a fantastic, beautiful job.
Because he has this kind of very playful sense to his art. And we were worried if we went too dark and too adult with the art on this, it would lose its emotion.
Right.
And yeah.
It has a character to it because it's, in some ways, it's a very welcoming. It's something that I like to see. But
yeah,
it switches and I don't know, it's like directing. It's directing my emotions. It's basically showing me how I should be feeling. And I also, just on a side note, I love how he's drawing the villages. And he's got, in each book, he's got a two-page spread. One where she's in the school, where, you know, and there's a library on top. I just stared at that for a long time. And then the second one, the town square, when everybody, when they're being chased.
Yeah.
And I thought that was absolutely brilliant, how you're showing the chase through this two-page spread.
Yeah, that was an awesome scene. I can't wait for people to read that whole chase scene. Yeah.
It's fun because, I mean, we think it makes it gets the viewer, the reader to be a little more interactive. You know, you're really like in it.
Yeah, you have to trace through and we have the lines through and all the characters. Yeah. I love that bit.
That's one of those things that's hard to pull off. I've seen some people have the idea, but it turns into mayhem. Yours, I was never lost. I knew where, my eye knew where to go at all times, and I was able to take in all this information at once. How did you do that?
I think a lot of planning.
Yeah.
Obviously, like the script, we're very specific, and then obviously when Giuseppe, we call him Joe. He likes to be called Joe. you know, when he first inks it and draws it out, we like look at it, and then. Yeah. You know, there's a few iterations of it, but just communicating and figuring out what works once it's on the page. And yeah, it pretty much worked, except some tweaking, but it turned out really well. So I'm happy that you enjoyed it.
our scripts are a little descriptive. They can be maybe sometimes too much, but I think a lot of what we do starts at emotion and character driven first. And I think that makes us think we want every audience member reading it to see what's happening at every point so they can feel it. And so we're so careful about thinking, well, how can they misinterpret this? And we don't want them to misinterpret this. So we try very carefully to do that.
And one thing you mentioned about you felt being directed, like we come from a background, like we do also direct, we write and direct. So I think sometimes, you know, this is our first graphic novel, but I feel that we have taken some of those skills onto this and we're very specific with how we see it and that crosses over.
Yeah.
How was it any different when you're putting films together to making a comic? Was it similar? Was it different?
There's a lot of similarities, a lot.
Yeah, I think at the beginning we were a little, you know, it was our first time, so we were intimidated. We definitely didn't think, oh, we got this, you know, there was a learning curve. But as we started going into it further, we were like, oh, this is like, you know, well, we only work with our artists, but it's like when you're working with a cinematographer and you're figuring out the framing of something, but with our artists too, like drawing the faces and getting the expression, it's almost like when you're working with an actor and, you know, giving some direction with adjustments.
I mean, Joe is basically our director of photography and our production designer and costumer and set designer. And so, you know, we're kind of like lumping that all into one. And at the same time, we, as writers and directors on the first half, I also do film editing as well. So we also have to think ahead when we're putting the panels together and writing it. It's kind of just like editing in the pre-visualization stage, so it's like film but in different parts. You're rearranging the way in which you do things.
And we don't, you know, we don't work with an editor, you know, just, you know, it can get expensive to do all this. We would hope
comic
to do
book
it
editor,
comic book editor. So in a way we it's nice to also work together because we're like looking at it and then we can right. bounce off of each other. And yeah. and then Ethan has a great eye too, as coming from, you know, that editor skill.
Has there any been a time that you've written things out and got the pages back and had to make a change? Or has it been
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Sometimes Joe will give us some pages and we'll be like, oh wow, we didn't, when we wrote it, we weren't thinking of that, but he turned such a great panel. We're like, oh, okay, we want to rewrite some of the dialogue to make this work because that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. And we totally just sent back, hey, change the dialogue, and or we're going to change this next panel because of what you did. And he's so good and so gracious to allow us that time to work with him. Mm-hmm. And while we do respect like limiting how much we're going to have him,
like revisions,
yeah. he is... I think he's, or I like to think that he's excited about the book as much mm-hmm. as we are, mm-hmm. That he gives us that time and he wants to work with us.
Yeah, it's collaborative, you know, yeah. it's like we become a team. So yeah. mainly, you know, after we're doing just, the first book and then, yeah, it's just the three of us. So even though the distance, thankfully, with technology and, you know, we're able to communicate and just make these changes and, you know, yeah. What Evie was saying about, sometimes, you know, it makes us just change the dialogue. We're like, oh, we could be more concise with this. Or, and sometimes it's just about clarifying some things, or, you know, we realize two panels could be one or vice versa. But yeah, it's a team effort.
I never thought when you said about video editing, when you edit through the movies.
Yeah.
I never thought about that being different, that you'd have to do that before you send it to the artist in the case of a comic compared to getting the film.
Go ahead. I think of film editing as the last stage of your screenwriting, because yeah. you're putting it together and you're essentially pacing out the movie, and you might have to redo a few things. You might have to, you know, add some more voiceover lines or ADR, or maybe you have to reshoot a scene and go back and tell them production needs to reshoot because this isn't working. So you put it together and it's essentially your last script revision. So on the comic book side, it's just, you know, it's just another revision of the script, but you're just pre-visualizing that because you got to think how the panels lay out, just like you would how you're editing the scenes together. You know, do you have enough coverage, you know? And then the added thing in comics that you don't have is like, is my page turn good? Am I ending on the right panel that I want people yeah. to turn well? Or is my spread look good in the middle? You know, obviously we're talking about print as opposed to just digital, mm-hmm. but.
Well, did you understand it before you came in? Or were you already thinking this before you came in? Or was this something you learned as you were doing it?
I think we learned it as we were doing it, and we applied our filmmaking technique and sensibilities to it, and we were like, oh, you know what, it's like this. And I think, well, we went back a little bit and revised part one. So for this next Kickstarter, there's going to be some dialogues done. We redid a few of the panels. We might redo one more. But like, yeah, I mean, if we went back now to rewrite it, it would be different. Just the same, though, if you went back and redirected a movie that you already shot, it would be different. You learn everything as you go.
I mean, the same yeah. story, but just maybe some things that could be clearer or just more concise that we realize we're like, oh, this needed this little thing, or this didn't need to be there. But yeah. So, yeah, the reprint of the first book is minimal changes, but we think they're edits that make it better. It's still solid, the same yeah. length, right. nothing major, just yeah. things that we learn. And as you progress with the story,
yeah.
you know, you realize, because the first book is chapter one, and it's really the setup of the whole world, because it's a very specific town, very specific characters. There's a lot of characters. So it took that whole first book to really set up this world, and
yeah.
you know, this next book is going to be, it's the next, it's chapter 2 through 6. That's why it's 108 pages.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised when I was reading. I always wait to the last minute to read these so it's fresh. And the first one, it was quite a read. I mean, they're both great, But I was kind of surprised in the second one. That's it. I thought there'd be more because the first one, it's taking me through. When I say this, I didn't feel shortchanged. I just was surprised either you guys got really smooth with the storytelling or it just wasn't as long. I think it's the second part.
Yeah. We just gave you a hint.
A sneak peek of book two because that's only the first 20 pages. So there's still another, you know, yeah. If I can do my math. 68 pages
from that.
Yeah, it's 108, so minus 20, another 80. Yeah,
but right now we're basically at with Joe. We're at about in the mid 70s, and we should be done by the end of the year, so that we can get these books out to people at the early part of 2026. So the whole full thing isn't completely illustrated, but we're well on our way. But we didn't want to give you. We wanted to give you at least a full chapter. Yeah. We didn't want to give you half a chapter or anything.
Oh, we've had people come on the show that just gave us 6 pages, and that's sometimes enough. You just kind of need to have a feel of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But so no complaints. But I wish you didn't leave me where you did on the second part.
Well, we're glad that it sounds like you want to know what's going to happen next. So we're happy that that's the case. So.
To continue the story. When I finished the first book, I'm thinking, man, I can't wait. I just immediately went to the second one, just wanted to know more. And then you stopped there and thought, oh, man, this is... Okay, so it was... What made you decide to do a comic book?
I mean, so we had a lot of people in our circles. We initially envisioned this as kind of like a TV show or a movie. Yeah. And we were kind of well on our way to doing that. And we had written something and we were going to get some traction, but then the pandemic hit and everything kind of just cooled off. And then we were kind of concerned about, you know, if we just kind of handed this off and it could be taken from us and we wouldn't have much in the way of ownership. And then my brother, who knows another amazing indie comics person, Charlie Stickney of White Ash Comics, he kind of like was telling us, maybe you should think about turning this into a graphic novel, your comic, you could own all your intellectual property. And that took some time for us to come around to it, but then we yielded.
Yeah, and also because it's such a big world and visually, you know, it was another thing that it makes a lot more sense to have it on the page and people could see the world than them just imagining it. Yes, it's great on a black and white page, but when they actually see the colors, the textures, and all these characters come to life, it's just much more impactful.
Yeah, I'm not going to show you anything but just the glimpse, but see, I think this maybe started us. We had actually did a pitch book for
like
the show. And so we did something like this, you know, and I think that was kind of like maybe started us off on the idea of maybe this would work as a graphic novel.
Yeah, because we wrote the pilot for the TV show, and in terms of attraction, basically we placed highly in a competition and they were supposed to get it out to producers and production houses and get like some traction with that, and then the pandemic definitely halted it all. But we said, well, we can keep the project going, and you know, that's what happened. We just set course to make it, and this way we can own our IP, our intellectual property of what, you know, what we've created.
I've seen projects where, you know, some comics where they were wanting to make a movie and they put a comic book out. And I mean, some of them have been quite nice. A lot of them, you know, I appreciate the fact they did it, but some of them come out kind of generic looking to me. And this one, it looks like you guys wanted to do comics from the get-go. It's a unique book. It's a beautiful book. And I mean, even though I'm joking about all the horrifying things, which I really mean, but it has a charm to it.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
That was a big thing for us. We're trying to balance that thing between kind of a little bit of horror, but also charm and heart.
Like some tongue-in-cheek, some, you know, some humor within all the darkness of it all.
Yeah. And kind of like, you know, like a good old Tim Burton movie, Edward Scissorhands or something like that, or, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas.
Like, there's fun to it.
Maybe a little darker than
that. Yeah, darker for sure.
But, you know, even the most horrifying things always have humor to it. You know, the ones that don't work is the ones that don't have any. I had something. My mind's going in so many different areas. How has it been doing a comic? I mean, is it like, do you just want to go back to movies again? Do you plan on doing any more comics after this project?
I was going to say, you said it looked like we just wanted to do comics, and I appreciate that, and I take that as a compliment.
Yeah, thank
you. Because I think when we decided to do it, we did our research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we dove into it. We have, like, in our living room now, like, there's a whole bookshelf that's just all graphic novels and comics. And we kind of dove into it. We went to comic cons. You know, we kind of immersed ourselves and said, if we're going to do this, we want to do it as right as we can with our own spin on it.
And a lot of respect for it. It's a lot of work and a lot of respect for it.
Because the community also is very awesome.
Yeah.
We do love the comics community. They're very gracious, intelligent, hardworking people. And so
generous. They accepted us with open arms and just very open to talking to us if we had questions or advice. And it was a really great experience just being embraced by them.
Because I think we're filmmakers, we view ourselves as artists and we see that comics is another art form. So we respect the people who do it as another art form.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't just coming in to be like, here, I'll show you how it's done.
Yeah.
I think we came to it with respect. A long answer to your question, I'm not sure after this what, you know, would be in store in the comics world for us. We definitely want to finish this part three. Our plan is to come out next summer and then the whole graphic novel will kind of be done.
It'll be a total of like 200, what were we saying, 270 pages?
No, 250, I think.
Something, for the three books.
And that being said, we know we have at least three more graphic novel ideas for Shock-Headed Peter to continue.
Wow.
But we don't know if we'll still work in film and TV. But we're not sure if there's a desire for it and there's a pathway to it. I don't see why we wouldn't continue.
Yeah. But with this story and this world and these characters, that's where our passion is in terms of, you know, the graphic novel. Yeah.
Right. No, I was just curious about it. If this is all you did, it's enough. It's just absolutely beautiful. It's a charming book. It's a wonderful book. And again, it doesn't seem like movie people came in and just tried a comic book. It seemed like you started from the ground up doing it. And when I say that, I'm sure your films are just wonderful as well. And keep doing them. Or I love movies. But, and documentaries, everything in the whole planet. Now, we've said this before. I just full transparency. I've had some issues tonight with the recording. Shock-Headed Peter, it gives me the heebie-jeebies. I break out in cold sweats. And we said this before. When I was a kid, we were living in Utah. My mom liked to watch scary movies. My dad was working at night in an oil field. She didn't want to watch him alone, so she'd have her 3-year-old son sleeping on the couch. I'd wake up, and I'd see these horrifying images that nobody could explain to me. And one was Lon Chaney with the top hat looking just creeped. And you knew the movie where this came from.
London After Midnight.
Oh. It was, whenever I look out a window at night to this day, I'm not three anymore, but I still see Lon Chaney looking with those crazed eyes. That was a painted cover by Basil Gogos on Famous Monsters of Filmland, I think. And absolutely horrible. So thank you very much for bringing up a childhood horror.
You're welcome.
Glad to be a
happy
service.
But I had so many questions. You actually answered them quite well. Could you mention some of the film work that you've done, if you don't mind?
Sure.
Our dog is starting to...
Of course.
We have a boxer and he wants the window open, so sorry about that.
Very demanding.
Yeah, it's very demanding. He's been very patient. So, I mean, we've done a lot of independent work. We write, we direct. We've done a lot of our own projects, and we've also worked. We've been, like, work for hires for other companies. I'll say something that we did that is kind of in this world, it's in the vein of the Twilight Zone, is an anthology series called In Absentia, which people could see on Prime. I think it's like, you have to rent it though.
Yeah, it's like a short film anthology of kind of like a sci-fi mystery horror shorts, in the vein of Black Mirror or Twilight Zone or Outer Limit. Mm-hmm. And that that premiered at the Raindance Film Festival in London. I've edited on like TV shows. I worked on the show Empire for a couple seasons on Fox, a show called Mysterious Benedict Society in Disney Plus. I am an associate producer on a new horror movie that's coming out next month in theaters, called In Our Blood, or later this year. We're still waiting on definitive dates.
We also have quite a few short films. I'm fully bilingual. I was born in Mexico City, so I've written for some narrative shows for Spanish language television. Yeah, and I've also written and directed for a series about Alzheimer's disease. Also scripted.
You created that series.
Yeah, I was hired to write and directed, and there was three seasons of that, called Lost Memories. We've had our opportunities to be creating independently and also been hired by companies to do so. And that's what we love to do, and we hope to continue doing, creating our own projects. And with this graphic novel, we do hope that one day it can be seen as a TV series or as a film trilogy. Yeah. You know, there's definitely a lot of room for growth, and we'd love a wide audience to experience it.
That's a big spectrum what you're talking about, all the projects you're doing. They all sound extremely interesting. And again, back to this, anybody listening, the information will be on the blog. I'll have some examples of what the work is. This is absolutely fantastic. Like I said, we just mentioned the main protagonist and the title character, but there's so much more in this. There's other side characters. When the one side character busted out to help the protagonist, on the bike, I wasn't expecting that one. I stood up and cheered when I was reading that. There's so much to this book. I love all the glass bottles that's drawn. I love, again, I mentioned the colors. I love the family history. I do not like the person that's, I'm trying not to give everything away, but the person that brought all the timepieces in to get fixed. This thing has it all. And again, I love the lettering. I'm looking at one of the pages now. And when Chalk-Headed Peter is speaking, it's reversed out with a white outline. And sometimes the word balloons fracture. And I just think, God, this is, I don't know. It's, the three of you were born to do this stuff. So thank you for doing that. And I'm going to leave it at that.
Thank you.
Do you have now on the second one, did you say you have a campaign going on? Or is this all done?
No, we're launching soon. It's going to go from October 8th to November 4th.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're listening, that'll be on the blog. So you just click on it and go to it if you want to support this. Absolutely just fantastic. Any parting words that you'd like to pass on to anybody?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having us on, and we're so happy that you enjoyed it. And we really hope that people, you know, will go out and experience Shock-Headed Peter Part 1 and Part 2. And we hope they enjoy it as much as you have.
That sounds nice. Everybody, thank you for listening. In the meantime,
read
more
comics.
You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
Joe Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.
If you would like to be part of the show, draw a fake comic book cover and we'll use it to promote our new episodes online.
If you'd like to promote your music, send us your MP3 and you can have a musical spotlight on the show. Plus, we'll add you on a link on our music page.
We have t-shirts designed available for you. So you can find them on the sidebar of the blog. Listen to the show, wear the shirt.